There are these online trends, a TikTok trend, pop psychology in 30 seconds of a reel. And a lot of what we're seeing there is around this idea of estrangement in relationships. Toxic parents, cut them off, cut the ties. And so it's also playing into a lot of these younger kids that are still navigating what it is to actually develop and mature psychologically. And so they are put in this position where they decide that they're going to rather cut ties rather than work on the relationship.
This is a Baby Brunch podcast.
Welcome to another Baby Brunch podcast. I recently had an Instagram inbox that literally had me stopping in my tracks. And then when I looked around me, I realized that perhaps it's not that unusual because I knew a few people that this is happening to. It's where a parent and an adult child, they no longer speak, and this is not because of death or distance, but because one of them decided to walk away. And so today we're talking about, I guess, parent and child estrangement. Ek het hom afgeskryf, we don't talk anymore. Ek praat nie, I don't speak to my mother. I don't speak to my father. Yeah. There's another term, I sat shiva, where you pretend that the child is dead. Because either they have harmed the family or this parent has done you so much injustice that you actually wish them away. So I brought in the best. Dr. Jenny Rose has helped us on many podcasts. And today I'm very sad talking about this because, as I said to Dr. before this, I have a great relationship with my parents. But there's one relationship that I did have to work on when it comes to my mom and my dad. But I'll tell you about that shortly. Doctor, welcome to Baby Brunch. It's good to have you back. It's wonderful to see you.
Oh, thank you, Ilana. As always, it's so lovely to sit down and have a conversation with you.
This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.
So we are exploring, I guess, what and I don't know if psychologists see this a lot. I mean, I don't have stats on it. And even if I did, you're on Parents and Baby Brunch, I don't always believe the stats. I want to see what everyone comments and what we say. Do we say it's an ambiguous loss, or is it grief without closure? What are we dealing with?
Yeah, I think both of those terms are very accurate. I think we are dealing with a devastating loss of a relationship. If we look at what we all hope for and probably aspire to in our lives is a good relationship with our parents. And, as parents ourselves, that is our goal, is that we want to have good, solid relationships with our children forever. And that really is the guiding factor. And I think when that does not happen, it is a devastating thing to come to terms with. So the loss of that relationship is really huge, and the impact is felt so deeply.
I remember there was a time in my, not friendship circle, but colleague circle, that I didn't speak about my parents too much because I realized that most of my girlfriends and colleagues grew up without one of the parents. So either they didn't have relationship with father, or they didn't have relationship with mother. And I remember that there was this guilt that I carried around, I have both my parents, therefore I'm privileged, It wasn't a money conversation or private school versus, it wasn't that. It was the fact that I had both parents and that they only had one of them. Is this common in practice? Do people come and see you because they felt that they missed out, or that I have the unfair advantage if me or you have got both parents?
Yeah, I think that is something we sometimes call survivor's guilt in a way, or even comparative suffering. And so what that speaks to is really this idea that, you know, even though I might be struggling with something, I can always look at a friend or a colleague or somebody else who has it worse or has it harder. And while, of course, I think that holds true for all of us, I think there's something humbling and sobering about recognizing the suffering of others. We also disadvantage ourselves when we write off our own struggles because we think they're not big enough. And I can't tell you the number of people that sit opposite me that really go, I feel a bit like a fraud being here, or I feel like my problems are so minor compared to somebody else's. And I think we've really got to shift that mentality to understand that whatever it is we're going through, if you are privileged to have two parents that are alive, and you might be struggling with complexity in that relationship, that is a big thing, and that's going to weigh heavily on you. And you are entitled to feel the way you feel. You don't need to kind of remind yourself, well, I'm lucky to have both of them, because it's not so simple that we can just lay things out on a table and use the facts to determine how we cope emotionally. It's far more complex than that.
Well, talking about complexity, at what point does estranged become undone? I have decided that you are dead to me.
So I think there's a few things that actually impact that, and we can really discuss it in a bit more detail. I think one of the things that determines that is when behavior continues to remain the same. So a lot of the time there are conflictual parent-child relationships. You know, there are certainly in South Africa, all over the world, of course, but it's not all good out there, and parents are not doing the best job all the time. So there are a lot of homes where there's a lot of struggle in that parent-child relationship, that parents are failing kids or letting them down, or, you know, really not showing up in the ways that they should be. There are, of course, millions of parents that are doing incredible jobs as well. But I think for those people, when they've really challenged these things that bug them, these difficulties that they have in the relationship, really opening their hearts to say, I've found it difficult when you've showed up like this, and I'm really asking you for our relationship, for you to shift the way you show up, or perhaps for you to do something a little bit differently. And if that person continues to ignore your pleas at attempting to repair the relationship, it leaves a lot of people in a position where they say, in order to protect myself, I put these boundaries in place. And so it becomes a big boundary thing. And boundaries are definitely, I think, the buzzword of our generation, that it's about putting boundaries in place at work, boundaries in place with relationships in your life. And those are obviously really good things. But I think sometimes what's happening is people are saying, I need to put a boundary in place for this relationship. So that's the first big thing, I think, that we are seeing. The second side of it, or the flip side of what we see, is especially with the younger generation, there are these online trends, a TikTok trend, you know, pop psychology in 30 seconds of a reel. And a lot of what we're seeing there is around this idea of estrangement in relationships. Toxic parents, cut them off, cut the ties. And so it's also playing into a lot of these younger kids that are still navigating what it is to actually develop and mature psychologically. And so they are put in this position where they decide that they're going to rather cut ties rather than work on the relationship. You know, it's a little bit of that inability to delay gratification that we see with this generation. Everything they have is a quick decision. It's at their fingertips. So this is, of course, a generalization. And by no means does this hold true to every single young online person that we see. But we definitely are noticing more and more of a trend in younger people and through the online exposure.
Talk about this exposure. I mean, my son, and I wasn't going to ask him in a podcast, right? So he's 19. And yesterday he shared something to his dad's phone, which I happened to see, because dad's phone is my phone and my phone is my husband's phone. And that's how it works in our house. And then he talked to me about boundaries. And I was like, you will not, you know, tell me about boundaries. Have you ever told your colored mom, like, there's a boundary, I will climb over that wall, I will come for you. Okay? Don't tell me about boundaries. If you send me something, I'm going to respond. You know what I mean? So it's interesting that, you know, who calls boundary? And when are we going to start unboundering things so that we can actually just get along and talk about it? I tell you what bothers me about this entire conversation, right? So I personally know of parents who wrote off their children. And I didn't think of recording anything with a psychologist until I got that Instagram inbox from Anonymous. I'm just going to say Anonymous because she's in it. You know, where a parent emotionally says, I'm done with you, I'm writing you off. And then two women in my friendship circle, guys, I love you. And I've never met their mommies, but they don't have relationship with their moms. And they tell me that. And so I can ask them why, and I have. But at what are we doing it because we're trying to protect ourselves? Are we doing it because of pride? Are we not just exhausted? Maybe we're tired and we should all sleep and sit around a table. Because here's what's difficult for me in this conversation. I don't know how to fix it.
Exactly. And I think that's exactly it, is that there isn't one quick solution that can solve or resolve this issue. And I certainly don't think there's one reason as to why people are maybe going this route versus someone that chooses not to. And certainly without context, we can never fully understand or know why someone might choose to do that. But I think we have to really see so many different sides of it. I really hold both cases in mind, and I have compassion for both positions. I think on the one hand, you know, we really are building this idea of self-preservation. I think for so long there's been this idea that we need to sabotage ourselves or, you know, compromise ourselves at all costs to keep everybody else happy around us. And we're starting to actually say, you know, we are also important and we need to put things in place that protect ourselves. So absolutely, I think for many people, it's about protection of those boundaries. And certainly when we think about boundaries, it's such a good thing for us to be more mindful of boundaries. But there are times probably like your son that, you know, he's saying, I want more boundaries in my life. And we have to actually say, but you're also 19. There needs to still be some solid boundaries in your life. You know,
but I was going to say that relative. Why are we calling boundary every time we want to talk about something? You know,
for sure.
It's interesting for me in families because typically I think at work or in any situation where I'm working with a client, I am obedient and we are in a professional setup and the client wins because I want to show and I want to present and I want to have fun. But when it comes to my family, I enjoy a good confrontation. I enjoy a moment of, let's quickly just sit down and talk about this because I'm not going to pretend that it's not there. And I can name the amount of Easters and holy days and Christmases where I said, I'm not going to sit around the table until it's sorted out. You know,
for sure.
I'm not going to pretend.
And I think it's such a beautiful thing to be able to do that. But I think the other side of it is that we have to hold in mind for many people, our frame of reference for navigating this kind of stuff is what we grew up with. And that we can't change. And that is the parenting home you are born into is the only experiential moment of what parenting is like that you will have. So yes, you can see what parents out there do, but our only frame of reference is really our own experience of being a child in the home that we grow up in. And so that plays a massive role in how people deal with things. So even for you, you know, being able to face conflict and be able to hash this out over a dinner table is an incredible thing, but that's a space you feel safe in. For many people, conflict is such a triggering thing because of their upbringing and what they carry that they will do everything to avoid it. And so that's why there's such complexity in this, because we are constantly navigating what we are doing intentionally in our homes with our kids, but we also carry with us the way we were raised, the triggers that we have, the blind spots in our own parents' upbringing. And those are all things that we bring to the table. And so we can't ever think of these conversations without factoring that kind of stuff into the equation.
So that's fair, because you gave me factors of how different we all were raised or grow up, or how different we are as people. Some enjoy confrontations, others don't. You know, I say jump over that boundary wall, and you know, my kid goes, no, I want another boundary. Let's just, you know, build a wall around Cape Town Airport, because then it will keep everyone out, you know, that's trying to scare us and trying to hurt or harm instead of like dealing with the actual issue that's at hand.
Yeah.
And the reason I get so passionate about this is because other than our upbringing, there must be many other factors that has contributed in this separation, in this distance, in this we no longer talk. I can imagine also with my own son or family, if I push too hard, I can see that no one wants to discuss it and that I at times have lost a little bit of trust. So I also need to be very careful about how hard I push in order to discuss this thing, you know, so that we can have the next family meal and sit down. What other factors? And I mean, Doctor, more recently, I started thinking about this. I was very young when my mommy went through a lot of trauma. She actually went through trauma on her brain. And today we almost joke about it because mom's fine and she's alive and we all have a great relationship.
Yeah.
But that instance of trauma pushed her into early menopause. And I remember my mom in the 80s as always being angry. And so a part of me is thinking, are there not other factors that some of us are not considering? Instead of just saying she was a really terrible mom or he was a really horrible father. So we've discussed factors of how they were raised, you know, mental health. What about menopause or depression, addiction, or even perhaps they grew up in a certain way and they were trying something different and it just didn't work out.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, I think we can't look at anything through the lens of psychology without factoring in the, you know, numerous hundreds of different components that play a role. And every single one of them that you've named are, of course, huge elements. Trauma, you know, we are a country that is rife with trauma. There is so much trauma that is experienced for most individuals in this country that we are desensitized to the impact of trauma. So trauma is a huge one. Absolutely. Health things, mental health, something like menopause, you know, stresses, financial stresses, context of where you live, grief, loss, death, schooling. There are numerous factors that play a role here, without a doubt. But I also want to give the sort of, you know, play devil's advocate a little bit to challenge the other side to say, regardless of what the context might be, if you turn to a child that's really had a tumultuous and difficult relationship with a parent, their subjective experience is really what counts. It doesn't, you know, doesn't really justify it when we provide logical reasons. If that child has spent their childhood feeling unseen or unloved, or whatever the feeling might be, regardless of the reasons for that, even if we can justify those reasons, we still sit with a person that has experienced their home or their parenting in that way.
It feels like there's an opportunity for some of us to trauma, but then it's not your turn, so you just have to take it, you know? When is it my turn?
Yeah.
You know, in some families, it's the eldest. In some families, it's the youngest. You know, we've got family, they move away, and the responsibility rests on one person to take care of family affairs, the death of a loved one, mom and dad, you know. When is it our turn to narcissist? When is it our turn to say, you know, because of my mental health, I'm unable to. You know what? I don't have the finances, so I'm not going to contribute this time, you know. So I'm speaking on behalf of the person that feels like it's always us, you know. For how long am I going to play superwoman to always be the better one?
But the same conversation holds true in saying that will never change unless you put those, dare I say, the B word, those boundaries in place that, you know, we will continue, people, the world will continue to ask of you. It's only you that can determine what you say yes to and what you say no to. So, you know, I often say to people, if we think about boundaries, you know, where does that word come from? And if a boundary is really a fence or something like a barricade that is able to distinguish the out there from the in here. And if we think back to years and years ago, the boundary fence was the thing that kept the predators away from the livestock, but also kept the cattle out from going, you know, kept the lions from coming in, but it also kept the cattle maybe from going out. And so that is what a boundary is. It's twofold. It's protecting us from not allowing everything to come in. We actually push it off, but it also contains and caps what we are letting out. And only we determine what our boundaries look like. And so for some people, their boundary wall is a beautiful glass surround that everything can be seen and you can move through. Some people have bricked walls with barbed wire at the top. You know, some people have a small gate that you can sneak through. Some have numerous doors. We've got to figure out, you know, what do you need? What preserves you? What keeps you intact? What is restorative to you in the type of boundaries that you set in your home and life?
Your analogy of the boundary is actually really beautiful, because I'm going to take the boundary wall and I'm going to make it a sift. I'm going to say, okay, well, we're going to let some in, let some
exactly.
out. And I want to know, so how do I distinguish between the parent that just wasn't themselves in a season? You know,
yeah.
It's the alcoholic father perhaps that has now rehabilitated and wants to reconnect. But there's, and I want to say this, there's time lost and there's unforgiveness and there's hurt, because where were you, you know?
Yeah.
So I mean, how do you distinguish between a parent that wasn't themselves, or a child that wasn't themselves in that season and that wants to reconnect with parent?
I think one of the biggest psychological processes that some people need to go through is the mourning of the loss of this idealized version of a parent.
Right.
So for, I think, many people, we sit with this idealized version of the hope that we have for our mom or dad and what we wanted them to be, what we envisioned them to be, the role we envisioned they would play in our life. You know, maybe even as you're an adult and that's now granny and the role you thought that they would bring into your home. And we have to first actually mourn the loss of that self-created idealized version in our head in order to make space for the real version. So that real version might fail you in many regards, might have created a huge amount of hurt, might still really bring a lot of hardship to the relationship. But we can only truly accept that and accept them in their faltered form if we have let go of the idea of this ideal parent in our minds. And that is a process of mourning, actually.
Well, talking about relationship and grieving, we've actually dealt with it here on Parent and Baby Brunch. So if you want to look at the stages of grieving, we spoke about it. We spoke about, God forbid, the loss of a baby, or when you're in a situation where there's a loss of a parent, and that's what doctors referring to, that even though this person is still alive, there's a process that one needs to go through because time has passed. I'm going to some actual scenarios that we've received, and I'm so sad, Jenny, because it is hectic, and I'm thinking of my own relationship with my mom. My dad and I have always been tight, but I remember there was a time that mom and I didn't get along. And when I realized that I needed to mourn the time that she was ill, I became a lot more forgiving. And I realized that the mommy that was sick because she was ill, because God gave her that illness at the time. And then I also happened to learn resilience and how to be independent and lots of other cool stuff that we've worked through. But there's one here that says, how do I understand and let my parent in if I've forgiven them and I've forgiven them again and they keep doing wrong? So it looks like the parent keeps disappointing the child, and she wants relationship. So there's forgiveness, or we reconnected, and then there's this offense again and again.
Yeah, it's really a complex situation, because one has to keep asking, you know, how many times do you keep banging your head on the same wall? How many times do you keep trying, hopeful that there will be a different outcome? And it speaks a little bit to what we've just spoken about, mourning the loss of that idealized version. It really, a lot of people feel like that's such a silly thing, but it's such a significant part of the process, because when you can let go of your expectation of what they need to be or how you want them to show up in your life, when you've let go of that and you've mourned that, it makes space for the acceptance of the version that maybe doesn't meet your every need, but you have more capacity for that because you don't feel disappointed. You're not left disappointed time and again. And that scenario is so tricky because it comes to a crossroads at some point where one has to say, when is enough enough? If I'm continuing to be hurt, it's, very similar to an abusive relationship. Would we be saying the same to someone, keep staying in that relationship in the hopes that they get better? That's not sound advice. That's not what we would be saying. We need to also validate that feeling relationally safe is critically important, and we have to prioritize that. And it's a lot harder when it doesn't feel like you're being hurt on a physical level, but we need to also know that preservation of our safety and security in a relationship is really priority.
Someone needs to take accountability. It's your fault. No, it's your fault. You know what? You're the problem. No, you're the problem. And it doesn't get resolved. I mean, it just feels like it's something that we won't fully understand unless both parties are willing.
Yeah, and I think that's what's difficult is that, to these two people have very different versions, I'm sure, of how they see the same situation and probably are on quite different pages about it. And so that again is where it gets tricky. This is not a beautifully wrapped, we can tick the box of how we've cleaned it up and navigated it in this beautiful way. But rather that it's messy and probably contradictory, and there's very different experiences. And that is what is also hard to sit with. And I encourage people to say, regardless of what the situation is, your feelings cannot be invalidated. You feel the way you feel, regardless of what the facts of the situation are. If you feel let down by a parent, that is sufficient. There's enough for us to validate and recognize how you feel. Yes, maybe we need to explore why you're misperceiving a situation or are you overinterpreting something, but no one should discredit your feelings. And I sit with kids in my therapy space all the time that will tell me things about their homes or their families or their parents or teachers. And I often know that maybe in reality, there's a different version of what's playing out. But for them, their subjective experience of that thing is the thing they're describing.
It's
And that
true
is
for them.
important for me to hear. It's true for them, 100%.
Let's deal with the sense of now reconciliation is not happening. It's not going to work out. It is how it is. Is loss ongoing? Or do you get to a point where you say, I've put a boundary in place. This is what I have decided together with lots of thought and prayer and counseling and sound advice. And therefore now, I'm going to start my grieving process about this person. Is it ongoing, or do you wake up one morning and go, sure, I remember having had a parent, and now I feel much better because they were really crap?
No, I definitely think it's ongoing. And again, I think there's complexity. So I think we, of course, know that grief looks different over time. But I think we need to hold in mind that this is a grief process, even though the person might be alive. So grief changes and shifts as we move developmentally. So as we are navigating, a new stage, a different phase, we are hit with different experiences of grief. And so that we will see all the time. So I think what's so important is that we have to understand that this is still grief. And grief means we are mourning the loss of someone, even if that person is still alive. And so as we move from one developmental stage or one season of our lives into another, we often re-experience that grief or that loss. And so the reality is, cutting off a parent is a huge thing. And I think we need to be realistic in that that will be a big thing that plays a role for the rest of our lives. And of course, time changes things and the heaviness we might feel, but it certainly is a very, very big thing.
It really feels to me that this complex relationship, whether it is saved, regenerated, unboundaried, or whether we decide to grief it both of both sides, it takes the same amount of time. It feels like it is a very long process, no matter what you decide, whether you decide to distance from this person or whether you decide to try and mend. That it feels like it's both sides. It's very difficult. Do you ever deal with cases where a death has occurred
before reconciliation, and this person now needs to deal with this process of guilt or regret or unfinished conversations? I mean, I really hope not.
It's an interesting thing. They almost anticipate or play out that scenario before it happens. So if people feel they want to cut off relationships with somebody else, they then play the scenario of, but what if something happens to them?
Right.
And that's an important thing to do because we have to face that. So if tomorrow something had to happen to that person, do you have regrets? Do you wish that you had handled it in a different way? Are there things that you would want to have said? And often I see this often with children or teens or early adults that have had absent parents. So it's again a reality in our country that there are a lot of parents that eject themselves completely from parenting. And those kids sit with really exactly that, this loss of a parent. They've had no parent all their lives, yet the parent is alive and out there somewhere. And a very helpful healing process is for them to write a letter to these parents because they say the things they need to say and they feel they've been able to articulate it. And, you know, the beauty that we need to hold on to, one of the single biggest, most important components to relationships in general, but certainly to parenting relationship, is the opportunity to repair. And we cannot underestimate this, the goldenness of what reparation is. I often say to adults even, think about if your parents had to come to you today and you're in your 40s, 50s, your personality is well developed. Your childhood years are many, many years behind you, long forgotten. You are well established, probably have your own kids, maybe even your own grandkids. But imagine how profound it would be if your parents today came up to you and said, you know, I've really been thinking about the way I showed up for you as a kid, and I really regret doing X and Y. And if I could change things, I would do it in a heartbeat. And I want you to know how sorry I am for that. And what a profound experience that is, even as an adult. And so the only thing about thinking about estrangement or cutting people off is it loses the opportunity for reparation, which is such a golden, critical thing for all of us in life. To repair a relationship or to be able to show up, you know, we repair daily with our kids. We mess up, we make mistakes, but hopefully we can show up and say, you know, I'm really sorry about the way I handled that situation. And if we're so quick to just cut that tie, we lose the opportunity for reparation.
Well, restoration and reparation, mend, fix, blend, love, heart, you know, all these words, sometimes we can be so hard on ourselves as parents, but this conversation, it really breaks my heart. And my wish for anyone who's listening to this podcast and watching our podcast is to hopefully get to a point where we can mend and that guilt or loss doesn't eat you up the way that I have seen in my inboxes, because it feels like it could be very, very painful. Doctor, I didn't prepare you on the next question, but I do think it would be incredible to support our parents who still live in South Africa and their children have decided to move and immigrate and leave. And now they have grandchildren who are growing up in a different country. And I see this with some of my parents and my in-laws' friends. I can see how they long for my children because we are all here, and I can see how they envy the relationship of togetherness because they have grandchildren, but they're not here.
That is a huge factor. I think that's such a reality in so many of our circles. And absolutely, in many ways, it's quite a similar conversation because these grandparents, these parents are having to mourn the idea that maybe they had of what they saw themselves as a granny and the role that they were going to play, maybe, you know, doing school pickups and watching every dancing concert or every hockey match or whatever it might have been. And so parents then have to do the same thing where they have to mourn what they envisioned it to look like in order to make way to accept the new relationship. And I think there's such beautiful opportunity for connection in so many different ways. But when we hold on to one idea or version, our hands are full and we have to let go of that in order to embrace and grab the version that lies in front of us. Just quickly, as a last question, because, you know, as someone that tries to fix and mend everything, I want to put a plaster on it with the hope that when I remove the plaster, that it will be fixed, you know? Do you have instances where the entire family or the parent and the child who were estranged, that they'll come and see you together? Or do you often find that in psychology, they'll come separately? Do they come independently?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think often as adults, they come individually and they're doing that internal work themselves. And a lot of, for adult work, we're working internally with those objects that we have and the relationships with what we thought we would have, and, you know, really kind of pulling back on childhood stuff. So we work very individually in that process. I think certainly when we have younger kids and teens, we're working a lot with those relationships actually in the room. And it's really incredible. Those are some of the best sessions to have, is that watching those opportunities for connection. And maybe not so far as there was estrangement, but, you know, I've very recently had a session a week ago that was profound, with a dad and a daughter that had such different perceptions of one another. And it was really beautiful to get them to see the other ones, because they had such different interpretations in their own mind. And I think that's the reality, is we need to also know that sometimes things get lost between us, and we have to give the relationship an opportunity for us to work to that reparation. So that's the first part. And the second is that I think a part of maturity, psychological maturity, is realizing that no person, no parent is all good. That true maturity comes when we have reached a point in our lives where we can say, maybe, wow, I had really good parents. They also failed in many ways. They also messed up on X, Y, and Z. Or I wish they could have shown up differently in this regard. But when we hold on to this idea that they need to be perfect, or that we need to be perfect as parents, we are just setting everybody up for failure. It's so much healthier when we can recognize that a person can have both good and bad elements in themselves.
Jenny, I've got so much more to say. I mean, I'm thinking of some of the things that have come through from, I should have never had you, or wish you weren't my mom, or things that were said and things that are still meant, you know? So I'm really standing in the gap today for every person that is longing a relationship with parent or child. And Dr. Jenny, thank you for every book you've written, every consult that you've had, and every estrangement that you have mended through this gift that you've been given. We really can't thank you enough. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Ilana. It's so lovely, as always, to chat with you.
Thanks so much for listening to this podcast. A quick thanks to our support. This podcast is supported by Epimax, the dermatologist-recommended skincare range specifically formulated to hydrate, soothe, and protect. Whether it's dry skin, sensitive skin, or just everyday moisture, Epimax has a solution for everybody. Fragrance-free, hypoallergenic, and suitable for all ages. Curaprox aims to create 1 billion healthy smiles. A healthy mouth means a healthy body and mind, creating better health for you. Great oral health starts from day one. It's never too early to start. Curaprox Baby gets your child on the right path of starting healthy oral care habits for life.